Not to say that, like, this isn't healthy, that people can't, like, find a lot of emotional fulfillment by making their relationship the most important thing in their lives. I think for some people that definitely works, but it is important for us to kind of, like, throw a caveat in there, or just say, like, this isn't necessarily for everyone, and that doesn't mean that you're not committed.
If you're happy with the same old ways of dating,
if you enjoy sucking at communication,
and you have no desire to improve your romantic life, then our podcast might not be for you.
But if you want some out-of-the-box ideas to deepen your current relationships,
broaden your sexual horizons,
develop a better understanding of yourself,
or learn more about non-monogamy,
then you've come to the right place. I'm Jace.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Dedeker.
And this is the Multiamory Podcast. On this episode of the Multiamory Podcast, we're talking about commitment.
Woo!
What does it mean to be in a committed relationship?
We got some commitment fans here tonight. No,
is it different from monogamous and non-monogamous relationships? What does it mean to be a commitment phobe? Do you and your partner see eye to eye on things like commitment and infidelity? And also, we are going to throw at you a fun new science term because we know you love science as much as we do. And we're going to delve into the nitty-gritty of what it means to be committed on today's episode.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm super excited for those. This is an interesting one and a little bit abstract for sure.
Yes. I mean, well, when I hear the word commitment, normally it strikes me as this very concrete concept. But then once you actually dive into the nitty gritty, then it really is like, I don't know what the hell anything is.
Yeah.
Right. It's thrown around so often.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, when I first... first was talking to my friends about being polyamorous, commitment was a thing that came up sort of as a criticism of like, you're just afraid of commitment, right? That's a common assumption
maybe when you find the one, then you'll commit to them finally.
Right. I don't know if y'all remember this, but one of the first emails we got to the show was about commitment. Do you remember that? It was from someone who had a Christian background asking about the way they phrased it was about this idea of having a covenant in your relationship, which is a very biblical term.
Like with Jesus? Because I learned about this weekend.
Well, I mean, we...
Like a triad with Jesus.
We can talk about that
show. That's a different sort of thing, yeah.
Okay.
commitment. But remember, that was one of the first emails that I think I responded to this show.
What did you say? I don't remember.
Oh, probably something brilliant.
Definitely.
Yeah.
They didn't write back because clearly they were so floored by my response that I answered all their questions. So.
Okay.
Well, I think that kind of hits on something, though, of that idea of like, in some ways we associate commitment with like a promise, right? Mm. Like I committed to these plans, or we had a commitment to meet up tonight, or right. We use it in that sort of sense.
What is the ring that people you have?
Like a promise ring?
That's the one. Yeah.
Okay. Sure. Like a commitment.
Yes. That was the thing in the 90s and mid 2000s that like all the tween celebrities were doing and all the tweens were doing too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was the idea of this promise ring, which is like, we're boyfriend and girlfriend, but we're intending to get married. And so we're exchanging not wedding rings, but promise rings that we're going to be together and not have sex until we're married.
Wow.
Was kind of what was often wrapped up in that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But then other times we talk about commitment more to mean like perseverance or something, right?
Like dedication.
Like I'm committed to my art, or like I'm committed to this podcast, or I'm committed to this religion, or you know, whatever it is, that it's not about like a specific promise or covenant or something, but it's like more we use it. It gets used a lot of different ways.
Yeah. Well, okay. Of course, as always, we went to the dictionary. Various dictionaries.
Which dictionaries?
We went to Webster's and we went to Urban Dictionary because that's always fun.
The classic combo.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. The Webster's Dictionary says that it is an agreement or a pledge to do something in the future, especially an engagement to assume a financial obligation at a future date.
So that's not very romantic sounding at all.
No, it's not. Well, okay. I'm looking up a commitment on Urban Dictionary. So here we go. Oh, goodness. Something men are frequently afraid of, Wow.
Gee,
that's
whoa,
ridiculous.
Geez.
Yep.
Sticking with something long after the mood you have set it in has left you.
Well, that's what? There's a story there.
Yeah.
Yeah, seriously.
To be loyal to an organization, person, or fan base. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. To be loyal. Okay. Yeah.
But what does being loyal mean, right? I feel like this, like there are all these kind of ephemeral terms that we use a lot, but it's like, what exactly do you mean, though?
Whoa, something women tend to try to say they want, but when they commit to you and you're married and have money, they dump you and you, like, you're a dumb shit. What?
Wait, what?
There's clearly a story behind that one, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyways, okay, Urban Dictionary. Okay, calm down. So, yeah. Also, I wanted to touch on that one of the articles that we looked at basically said that commitment is not believing that you have any other options. Like, yeah, that's... like, options are, like, not a thing in your life anymore. Like, if you do
believe
that...
I'm assuming this means romantically.
Yeah, that's
yes,
what
romantically. So, I mean, obviously, that's, like, a very, like, monogamy-centric type of idea. Although, we talked about this a little bit beforehand, and we were talking about, like, okay, you know, what do options mean in a relationship? And even if you're non-monogamous... like, it's not like you're switching a bunch of people out all the time. Like, you can still be committed to someone and not, like, go looking for other options.
Right. It's kind of like that distinction between dating multiple people and, like, maintaining multiple relationships versus dating multiple people in an attempt to, like, find the best one or find the replacement or
right.
upgrade.
Right, to keep your options open in case a better one comes along.
Right, you're hedging your bets exactly in case something falls through or in case someone better comes along.
Yeah.
I'm more taken aback by the phrasing of it, of commitment, meaning that you believe that you have no other options. Because that sounds more dire to me.
Well, this is actually something that I want to talk about a little bit later in the episode.
Okay.
But about this, like, commitment formula that some researchers came up with that does have to do with that, that one of the, like, parts of the formula is not about whether you actually have other options or not, but your perception of having other options.
I think I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Let's face it, like, we live in a world of options now, especially here
That's
in
true.
America. Like, you can go and have 15 different cereal options at the grocery store.
We are certainly spoiled for choice in many regards.
Well, yeah, and with Tinder or, you know, any dating profile, like, options are abundant. But, yeah, it is that question of, like, okay, you know, what do you think? Do you think you have options or do you think, like, no, I'm staying with this person and being committed to them?
Yeah, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Well, I just want to, can we just toss out there what are our hallmark traditional markers of commitment in relationship that we all grow up with
monogamy.
Being told
like sexual fidelity,
marriage,
you know, staying with someone when they're sick, I guess, or when they lose their job, or I don't know what, you know, through the for better or for worse kind of thing.
Even, think, like, having kids with them or getting married to them.
A lot of relationship escalator stuff. For me, it comes to the, like, I always have memories of, like, having the talk, like, the relationship defining talk or, like, the exclusivity
talk.
When it's like, okay, what are we doing? Are we making this an exclusive thing? Is this going to turn into, are we going to decide to commit to this relationship?
Yeah.
Right.
To the exclusion of any other options, I suppose.
Yeah.
So I have a fun infographic that I want to talk to you y'all about.
Are we going to get to see it?
I know. I'm like, this is good radio. We're just going to talk about it.
No, I'm just going to talk about it because honestly, it's not that great of an infographic.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
So this comes from what used to be one of my favorite sites, which was scienceofrelationships.com. Because it was just a big repository of just research on relationships presented in a really accessible, easy to understand kind of way. When doing a little bit of the research for this, I found that they rebranded. So scienceofrelationships.com now redirects to a URL that I think is pronounced Lovesy.
What? Ew.
Luvze. Luvze. And it's still the same content, still, like, research based relationship content.
Okay.
They've made kind of a weird logo for themselves of, like, these, I don't know how to describe it. It's sexualized shoes.
Excuse me?
That's all I can tell you. here. I'm going to tell the people about what's actually in this infographic, okay, yeah, but I'm going to send you a link so that the two of you can see it. Actually, if you just want to type in lovezee.com, then you can see it, L-U-V-Z-E.com or scienceofrelationships.com, and it'll redirect you. Anyway, so...
Oh, yeah, those are eroticized shoes.
Right?
But they're also gender normative shoes.
Yes, it's very eroticized gender normative shoes. Yeah. That's all I can say. I don't know what they were thinking with this rebranding, but anyway, still got some interesting content.
Oh, I see what's happening here.
They pulled together an infographic where they were kind of trying to, they asked a bunch of couples essentially, what is the ultimate sign of commitment? The results might surprise you of what people consider to be the ultimate signs of commitment. They found 7 displays of commitment that kind of came to the top. 36% of the respondents said exchanging any type of jewelry.
Oh, okay.
That was number one.
That's it.
Really?
Easy.
I guess very specifically about engagement rings, I'm assuming. Yeah, I'm assuming. I'm sure it's probably not like...
Probably other things too, though, like before
here's a toe ring and I will accept your ankle bracelet or anklet or whatever it is. I don't think it was that. 16% said, and the irony being that then the next one up, 16% of people said that it was sacrifice, faithfulness, loyalty, honoring, staying together, basically.
Okay.
Right.
The next one down, number 3, 12% said taking the next step. So getting married, living together, sharing
the
finances.
Escalator.
Yeah, of course.
Number 4 is changing the last name.
Mm. Oh, wow.
Wow.
Or hyphenating the name too also is considered a big sign of ultimate commitment. Down toward number 5 is the positive day-to-day interactions, like showing love and affection, respecting each other, being honest and trusting. 10% was kind of another catch-all category, things like getting tattoos,
right.
Honoring religious or spiritual traditions together. And then 5% said a public display, such as, they give 2 very extreme examples of public displays, posting it on social media or saying wedding vows.
Oh, wow.
Basically the same thing, really, you know.
Anyway, yeah. I thought that was kind of funny. Just it's like an order that I would not have expected as far as like priority of what people think is kind of like the ultimate commitment. That it's like
the wedding rings or
wedding ring is first and then jewelry. It's like actual commitment, I suppose, or actually sticking together, and then it's like more about getting the house and like changing the last name, and then it's about like actually being nice to each other on a day-to-day basis.
Right,
I don't know, I think it's kind of funny.
That is funny.
Yeah Another thing that came up in the articles that we were looking up for this is basically this is in a quote from Vicky Larson, who wrote the book The New I Do, was one of the co-writers of that, and also is doing some other kind of research and stuff into things like commitment and in relationships. What they found was that, you know, people talk a big talk about commitment, and that what it means in that context was doing whatever it takes to make a relationship work, like even if it's hard, even if it's challenging, whatever. However, if the question was, what if your partner sleeps with someone else?
And it's like, I'm out.
The answer is immediately, nope, not going to stick with that, not going to do that. And what she said here, I just wanted to read this quote. And she said, if we're talking about honest to goodness, down and dirty, I'm committed to doing whatever it takes to make this relationship work, commitment, then shouldn't a couple that takes commitment seriously be able to work through infidelity in whatever incarnation it comes to them and keep their marriage intact? Wouldn't that be the for better or worse part of a marriage vow? And I bring this up not to say like this is correct or that people should stick through that or whatever, but just to kind of point out that this isn't quite so simple, that people think it's like, oh, well, commitment's about like really sticking with someone no matter what. But then it's like, oh, but here's this caveat.
But the caveat is this.
It's like, but actually there are boundaries and preferences, and it's actually not the same for absolutely everybody in all circumstances.
Because probably there are people out there who would, when push comes to shove, try to stick out and work through an infidelity.
Oh, there's plenty of people.
Of course.
Yeah. But... I think we found
in some of the research, like there was a particular study where when they were interviewing people about their ideas around commitment, like they would ask, like,
if it was a one-time thing.
Yes, they're like, well, what if it's a one-night stand?
Yeah. They'd be like, well, we could work through
maybe.
That.
Yeah, but what about like many one night stands, like, ooh, I don't know about, like, basically they were like kind of teasing apart, like, oh, there's actually kind of edges to this commitment. Mm-hmm. And again, not that that's a good thing or that's a bad thing, that it's, yeah, it's just not this kind of black and white blanket thing that we're used to thinking about it.
Yeah. I think that's something that people definitely need to ask and talk about, like, early on. What does this mean exactly?
And I hope we get into this a little more later, but I do want to be clear that we're not saying that that means people are somehow failing at commitment.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, like, if commitment means sticking with it no matter what, if you're with someone who's abusive or horrible to you or is making you go bankrupt by spending all of your money, like, things that most people would say, yes, that's a relationship you could, you should get out of, that is by definition not committing to the relationship. So kind of just want to point out, like, commitment isn't this thing that's just inherently good all the time.
Yeah.
Like, it just is a thing. It's something that is important in some ways, but it's not just this, like, oh, if you just figure out how to do that, then everything's going to be fine.
Yeah.
Which a lot of the research even will start to make you think that, because they're looking at these kind of narrow sets of circumstances and data where they're like, oh, this type of commitment, that's what makes relationships happy and last longer. Mm-hmm. But it's not quite that cut and dry.
Yeah. Mm,
yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So let's talk about conceptions of commitment outside of just sexual monogamy, you know, outside of just, you know, if you agree to have sex with only me, then we're committed and it, there's fidelity and then it's all okay. So there's a recent study that was published in the Archive of Sexual Behavior. And I mean, quite recent, like January of 2019 of this year. So they did this really interesting study of a wide variety of couples, some of whom were monogamous and some of whom were consensually non-monogamous. And they introduced us to this new scientific term that I had yet to encounter in the wild, and it is sociosexuality.
Yeah.
And so sociosexuality is the tendency to desire and enjoy having sexual relationships with many different partners. So I appreciate that they come up with this term, because I think for a long time in a lot of the research we've been seeing, we're used to it being labeled as promiscuous. And even though promiscuous is technically not supposed to be a charged term, it is a very charged term.
Right.
But yeah, so just sociosexuality. And they kind of distinguish that, like, there are people who are more sociosexual than others, and that it lies along a spectrum.
Yeah.
So they found that past research usually has found that people who feel more sociosexual, that tends to be associated with lower relationship satisfaction and stability. However, a lot of that research has been done only in the context of monogamous relationships. And so it makes sense that someone who feels more sociosexual, someone who craves intimacy with lots of people, that yes, of course, they would feel less satisfied and less stable in a strict monogamous relationship that doesn't allow for that, you know, and that's just like fairly common sense, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whenever you say the word promiscuous, I can't help but think of that song.
And now, it's always going to be in your head.
Okay. So moving on, in this specific research that they did, they asked the survey participants about things like attracting forces and then constraining forces in their relationships. And then they also asked about relationship quality, stability, and commitment. And then also they found that, like, those things are kind of dependent upon a mix of both, on all of those things. Mm-hmm. So, okay, what is an attracting force? And this, they talked about attracting forces being factors that make people want to stay in a relationship. So things like feeling satisfied with the relationship, or having a long-term willingness to maintain the relationship, or even like seeing your partner in a highly positive light, all of those are attracting forces. Something I think that it makes me think of, like, things that move you towards your partner.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, definitely.
And then the opposite of that are constraining forces.
Yeah.
I guess not the opposite of that. That would be repelling forces. But the, you know, the
another thing.
The other force toward commitment is constraining forces. And these are essentially, if you think about that one's like your magnets being pulled toward each other, this one's like there's some kind of container or a box around you that,
like
you,
a vice.
That you can't get out of, something yeah. holding you together, mm. whether you want to be or not. And so this would be things like feeling like your life would fall apart if you left, or that your partners would, or it's external pressure from family or from your religion or from just social norms, right? Mm-hmm. It's like something outside of yourself, maybe being financially dependent on this person yeah. or having kids with this person, stuff like that. That's kind of like an external force keeping you together.
Living with the person. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Things yeah. like that. So in a nutshell, it's like these attracting forces are the things that make you want, like make you desire to stay in a relationship, versus the constraining forces being the things that make you feel like you have to,
yeah.
like there's no option, or like it's an obligation. So the researchers found that sociosexual people who are in non-consensually non-monogamous relationships, in other words, they were cheating mm. in their relationships, they reported feeling less attracting forces, also less constraining forces, but overall a lower quality of life. So adding that all up together, like felt a general less sense of commitment.
Is which, this regarding yeah. the person who is doing the cheating, or just both, or the person who's being cheated on? I wonder.
I believe it was the person who was doing the cheating. Mm.
I'm pretty sure in this example it
was. Yeah,
that's interesting.
Yeah, that yeah. they were, yeah, what they were
their
finding.
Own quality of life is lower, and that yeah. they feel less keeping them in their current relationship.
Yeah, yeah. just less of these commitment forces in general, yeah. which yeah. also makes sense.
Yeah.
But they found that sociosexual people who were in consensually non-monogamous relationships, they experienced stronger attraction forces combined with less constraining forces at the same time. And that produced an overall sense of a higher quality of life. So they came to the conclusion that, you know, this type of relationship actually made the partners more committed to each other because they wanted to be together, not because they felt like they had to be. Mm.
And that's something you've brought up, Dedeker, before yeah. about kind of being one of your big changes when you started having polyamorous relationships, was this change from feeling like my partner's with me because he doesn't feel like he has a choice, or because he's just kind of, he's committed and so he's stuck.
Yeah.
There, I used the word right
yes.
there. Switching
totally.
From that to, oh, I know my partner's with me because they want to be with me, because they're not being limited to just that.
Yes, definitely. And now with this research, again, like bear in mind that they were studying specifically people who feel sociosexual. So people who want to have multiple sexual partnerships. Mm-hmm. I imagine that if they were studying someone who wasn't sociosexual, but who was in maybe a consensually non-monogamous relationship, maybe they would find something very different. Like maybe they'd find that person has more constraining forces where they feel like, I'm not happy about this, but I feel obligated to be in this relationship, or I feel scared of leaving this relationship. I mean, I feel like we've definitely seen that in real life examples plenty of times.
Yeah.
But they didn't specifically research that population.
Yeah.
Well, they do mention that there are many studies showing people, like the ones showing people having that lower quality of life in basically, like they pointed out in one of these articles that the studies that point out like single people having a lower quality of life
yeah.
is only done on people who identify as wanting to have a relationship.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not
similarly
exactly.
like being in a non-monogamous relationship. If the people you're studying are ones who do want monogamous relationships,
then yeah, they're not going to be
happy.
Unhappy.
So this study was just trying to point out like, hey, it kind of depends who you're testing and what you're testing for.
Yeah.
Also, I did look up, sociosexual. The first instance I can find of it comes from around 1991.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
But it seems like it hasn't really caught on yet, I guess, which is why we hadn't come across it
yeah,
before.
Yeah, that it makes sense that it would have existed, but I just, yeah, haven't really seen it in the zeitgeist, at least yeah. so far.
Yeah, I guess 1990.
Especially for those of us who are literally every single week going through research yeah. papers.
To find a new term is really amazing for us, yeah. Okay, so let's delve a little bit more into those reasons why people feel they need to stay committed in a relationship. We looked at a Psychology Today article that talks kind of specifically about marital commitment, but I think actually all three of these can be used in consensually non-monogamous relationships in various ways. And we touched on a couple of them in the previous section, but the first one is going to be that external or moral commitment. So this kind of like, to me, is like the optics section. Like, what does it look like and what do you want to kind of like show to the world about your commitment? And that kind of is the thing on your mind in the reasoning why you're choosing to stay committed to someone.
And that seems like that would count as like one of those constraining factors.
Yeah, exactly.
Possibly.
Exactly. It's totally that.
It's kind of external pressure.
Yeah. And I mean, I've talked about this before, but when I was in China over the winter time, I was around a couple of very religious people and they talked about one of them was going through a divorce and his wife was divorcing him. But he said, you know, even though I was in a loveless marriage, I would have still never divorced my wife. I would have stayed in this relationship because I'm religious and, you know, I don't believe in divorce. And that definitely feels like a commitment that is like a moral commitment. Like, I don't believe in this. God doesn't believe in this. And so I'm going to stay with this person whether I want to or not. So yeah. And I think even in consensually non-monogamous relationships, like what if you are staying with your partner because, you know, your parents wouldn't approve of you guys divorcing, even if you are no longer maybe in love with that person, or even just want to change the structure of your relationship because you're now consensually non-monogamous and you don't want to be in like a hierarchical type of relationship, but you feel morally or, you know, externally obligated to stay in that same type of structure with that person.
Right. And I think that that external pressure can also come from our peer group.
Oh, absolutely.
Intentionally or unintentionally, regardless of your relationship format, that sometimes you can feel like, because I'm connected to this particular community of people, like I feel like I need to stay in this particular relationship.
Yeah, or I'm going to lose that.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So that can definitely, I think, be just another one of those factors, one of those constraining factors.
Yeah.
So the next category that they had here is also, I would say, falls into that
external
the constraining
forces. Yeah. So it's basically like two of these work in constraining forces. And this one is practical or structural commitment. So this is, like I mentioned before, the like, let's stay together for the kids. Or something like, our lives are just very entangled. Like, we have shared cell phones and bills and a mortgage or rent or a pet or whatever it is. That's just sort of practically speaking, it's like, well, we should stay together for those things.
Or like, you love each other's, you know, your in-laws or something, like the families.
Yeah, that's a good one too.
It's difficult to want to say goodbye to that.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily want to paint that with a super negative brush.
Yeah.
Because it's like, if you have practical and structural commitments, like, I think that's fine. You know, I think especially if you're able to acknowledge that and see them for what they are, like, I think that's totally fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, just that it is another kind of different flavor. So rather than just being like, everything's just an external force holding you together, this kind of separates it from the like truly external and moral to the more practical structural things.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And so this last category, I think, starts to lead into this sense of those like attracting forces of commitment, and that's the personal commitment. Is the type of commitment when two people are emotionally committed to each other and they find the relationship to be the most important things in their lives. And I think that phrasing is interesting because it doesn't say they make the relationship the most important thing in their lives. It's like they find that the relationship is the most important thing in their lives. I don't know if there's something there or not, but I thought that's interesting.
Yeah.
They're not afraid to employ good communication, compromise, and make sacrifices for their partner or the relationship. This includes the idea that the couple is a team rather than just individuals looking out for themselves.
And yeah, in that, gosh, what was that book on the attachment theories, Wired for Love? They talked about this a lot, like the team aspect and like making your relationship into the most important thing in your life. Which again, if someone is in my opinion, like a what, a relationship anarchist structure, I don't know that they would ever say like one relationship is the most important thing in their lives. I don't even know if like you two would say that like your relationship with each other or any specific relationship that you have is the most important thing in your life. So this one kind of is a little I don't know, like, necessarily. Honestly, if I agree with it.
I don't even know what is the most important thing in my life. Because it's like, when I really get down to it, I'm like, well,
it's
surviving.
A bunch of, I mean, sure, but it's like a bunch of things together almost.
Yeah, I get that.
Well, I feel like culturally, we very much romanticize the idea of being single-minded about something.
Yeah.
And it doesn't like, okay, in relationship movies, it is the relationship.
Yeah.
It's like the rest of my life is going to fall apart, or other things I wanted to do, I'm going to give up, or other like personality traits of mine, I'm going to figure out how to change for the sake of this thing that matters more than anything else.
Yeah.
But we also romanticize this in terms of professional things too.
Yeah,
the idea of
true.
Like, I'm just going to, you know, everything else be damned. I'm going to focus on this thing that I want to do.
Yeah.
Or we talk about it with, you know, like humanitarian efforts or something. You know, we look at people like...
Or with like stuff you do with your own health, like dieting or working out or whatever, which also comes with its own kind of tangled and messed up things about how we need to feel about our bodies and stuff like that.
Yeah. And I mean, not to say that like this isn't healthy, that people can't like find a lot of emotional fulfillment by making their relationship the most important thing in their lives. I think for some people that definitely works, but it is important for us to kind of like throw a caveat in there, or just say like, this isn't necessarily for everyone. And that doesn't mean that you're not committed.
Yeah. That's a good way to say that.
Yeah.
I think that I would even take it a step further than Emily and say, I would argue that the vast majority of people are better off not trying to find just one thing, that's the only thing that matters in my life.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that you need to be polyamorous, that, you know, you could just have one relationship and that can be very important to you. But to get obsessed with this idea of something has to be the most important or like the only important thing to me, I feel like that's actually sort of an over romanticization of this idea of this like single-mindedness that I actually think for most people is not realistic and not healthy,
and it could
setting yourself
like,
up for failure.
Yeah. Unbalance and unhappiness in a relationship potentially. I don't know. It can be challenging, and like maybe if two people are monogamous and do it together in like a really structured way, that's not hurting the hopes and dreams of either person in any way, then maybe it can be done well.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
For a long time now, we've been fans of AdamandEve.com for getting sex toys or lingerie or accessories, things like that. It's just a fantastic resource with a huge selection. And now, not only do we have a fantastic offer, but we also have a promo code that will work on adammail.com and evestoys.com, which are their sites specifically for LGBTQ audiences. And our code is fantastic. It's 50% off of almost any item in the store and free discreet shipping when you use our code MULTI.
Yes, we love AdamandEve.com and have for years. They are our oldest and longest sponsor, and they just keep on giving great gifts to us and to our listeners. You can bring more pleasure and satisfaction into your bedroom by going to AdamandEve.com, AdamMail.com, or EvesToys.com and select any one item. It can be, you know, an adventurous new toy or anything you desire, something fun, something sexy, whatever sounds good.
So just enter offer code MULTI at checkout and you'll get 50% off almost any item plus free shipping. That's MULTI, MULTI at adamandeve.com, adammail.com, or evestoys.com. This is an exclusive offer that is specific to this podcast and it's better than any offer that is currently available on their site. So again, use code MULTI to get you not just the 50% discount, but also the 100% free shipping. Code MULTI. Well, that's always the balance that you're trying to strike is it's like, what's the healthy amount of investment into this relationship that it needs to keep going to make sure that we both feel good and fulfilled versus what is just like depleting myself
yeah.
and losing myself to trying to maintain a relationship.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And guess what? We got no blanket statements. If you came here for blanket statements here at Multiamory, you're going to be disappointed.
No, but like, hopefully all y'all out there are thinking about this a little bit and being like, hey, like, what is an important thing in my life? Does something need to be the most important to make it, you know, important enough or committed enough? I don't know.
And it doesn't have to be the same as the people around you necessarily.
And it doesn't have to be the same for all of your life.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah.
It can change. Alrighty, now we're going to get into the juicy woosy stuff.
All right.
No, I'm talking about a commitment phobia.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I think that this is the thing that a lot of people are like, oh, I don't want to be with a commitment phobe. Like, you know, I love so-and-so, but they're definitely kind of a commitment phobe. So I'm worried that like, they're never going to pop the question.
We found a lot of articles to that effect,
yeah.
right?
No, totally. Like 10 signs that your significant other might be a commitment phobe.
Right. That sort of stuff.
Yeah. But it said stuff like, you know, oh, they're promiscuous, or, oh, they never like, you know, make a date like a week in advance. They always do it on the day, and that means they're a commitment phobe. Anyways,
Like they show up late to things, or yeah, all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, yeah, but I mean, it gets a very bad rap. But I think perhaps it's a little misunderstood, because I think probably also those sociosexual.
Yes.
Yeah, people who are in that category could probably be thought of as a commitment phobe.
Well, I mean, well, sure, by certain rubrics, of course. I just don't think it's a binary. Like, either you love commitment or you're afraid of it. Like, it's never that black and white, you know? I think it's quite possible that, yes, you could be afraid of commitment in certain arenas. I've definitely experienced that, you know? And of course, yeah, you probably could be afraid of commitment in a wide variety of arenas, but I always feel like it's on a spectrum, and it depends on your circumstances and your time of life and what trauma you have. Like, I don't feel it really falls along these very harsh lines of like either you're commitment phobic or you're commitment, enjoying, commitment seeking, commitment,
yeah,
commitment fucking loving. I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess commitment philic.
Commitment philic?
Would be the opposite.
Commitment amorous?
Yeah. Yeah. Let's throw amory in there yet
again. One of those commie amories.
Whoa.
What? Oh, I see. Commitment not amorous.
Commie. 40 yeah. years ago, you would have gotten thrown in jail for saying commie. No.
Yeah.
Oh, man. 40 years ago was the 80s.
Yeah,
just so you know.
50 years ago?
50 years ago was the 70s.
Yeah.
When was it?
The 40s and 50s. You're talking about McCarthyism.
Yeah.
It was the 40s and 50s?
Maybe getting into the 60s.
I thought it was like...
I'm sorry, Emily, I did not research this for this episode because I didn't think that we'd be talking about it.
You're the one who brought up commie-phobia. I mean, commie-philia.
Okay,
commie-amory.
Specifically 1950 to 1954 there. There's your little bit piece of trivia for the day.
It's not very long.
Great.
Okay.
Yeah.
65 right. years ago.
Okay, so to go back to this commitment phobia thing, this is something that's actually hard to find any good anything about.
any good
research is what I mean, or any good like thoughtful writing about it. You know, we found some things, like there was one that's like 15 myths about commitment phobes.
Yeah.
That actually I thought was pretty good. But one of the quotes that came up in looking into this here is from a marriage and family therapist in New York named Racine Henry, said, "I think it can be embarrassing to say I don't want a commitment. I don't know if there's space in our relationship models to say that. I think there are a lot of ways to have a relationship and a lot of people who don't need to be in a relationship."
Yeah.
Thank you, Racine.
And I think that what this got me started down was this idea of, by calling it commitment phobia, there's this implication that wanting commitment, and generally this means a particular type of commitment.
Yeah.
Kind of as we talked about before, commitment's a broad thing. There's this idea that wanting that type of commitment is normal.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you don't want that particular thing, then you're commitment phobic, right? You have a phobia. You must have this fear. And then we also tend to associate it with trauma or having, you know,
less than good
attachment styles, or you don't love people, or there's like a lot of judgment put on
it. Or you just want to have a lot of sex or something like that.
You're right. Miscuous girl.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Commitment phobic girl. Sociosexual girl. Oh, I like that.
That's good.
Oh,
yeah.
Let's write that way.
Write that song. Yeah.
Yeah.
But what I thought was interesting about this in the article talking about like myths about commitment phobes is it was talking about this idea of that, like, kind of looking at, you could see someone who's like, oh, they're not committing to you in a certain way, and go like, oh, they're a commitment phobe. But if you looked at it a different way and you said that this person knows that either that's not something that they want, or it's not something that for other reasons they are capable of giving you.
Yeah.
That actually by not committing to that thing, they're being more caring and more honest and more genuine with you than someone who kind of falls into the idea that like, oh, well, we all want commitment. We all want this type of commitment. I'm going to commit to that because that's what I should want. And then fails at it and then fails to follow through on that commitment.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, I think that is a really interesting observation that this person made about there just not being space in our relationship models to actually say that to someone, you know, to even say, I don't want a commitment in this particular arena, or I don't want a commitment that looks this particular way. Because, yeah, because I think it is just so, we're just so used to it, being this black and white thing of like, commitment phobic, you know, your problem, I suppose.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then on the flip side, I think that we can have something like commitment addiction.
This is that commiphilia,
the
commiamory.
The commiphilia.
What do I, what is it? The monogamy thing?
Which
monogamy
when you, like, when you like jump from monogamous relationship.
Serial monogamy.
Like serial overlapping monogamy.
Yeah.
It's not always like overlapping.
Serial commitment.
Serial commitment.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we can have commitment addiction, also known as love addiction, or also otherwise known as staying in a shitty relationship.
Yeah.
Regardless of, you know, against your better judgment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I think it is interesting because I do believe we have really romanticized and sometimes fetishized more traditional forms of commitment. Because there is this idea of like, well, the problem is just, you just need to be more committed. And that's going to solve your problem.
Yeah, or try harder, like work more, give up more, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. And there's definitely this sense of like, you know, or you need to sacrifice more, or you need to, again, I think that all ties into this narrative of, you know, if you just work hard enough, then it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
You know, regardless of the fact that no amount of work can save you from a shitty partner, or an abusive relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of people out there are really taught like throughout their life that they're not going to be fully happy or fully realized as a person, or they're not going to be whole. Gosh, yes, that was it. Like that wedding that I went to was talking a lot about like becoming whole with another person.
Yeah.
Like, now we are whole kind of thing. And God is in there too. But yeah. Anyway.
God's in that hole too.
Jeez. But yeah, like that if you are not in a committed relationship, you won't be happy. And I think about my mom with this because I know that like growing up, she tried to find a husband and or a father for me because she was worried that like that conventional model would not, without it, I wouldn't be happy and she wouldn't be happy. But like her personal truth so much now and has been for, I think, you know, the last 20 years of my life and her life has been like, I am happier, much happier being alone. And in reading this article that this comes from, I think that, yeah, that's very apparent that a lot of people out there are actually much happier being alone and they thrive. Like they don't want, what she says is that she doesn't want anyone coming in and like messing up her life and like messing up her day to day and telling her what to do or that she has to like, you know, make decisions based on what somebody else wants. And I think, hey, if that's your fucking truth, live it, man.
Yeah.
And like, don't let anybody tell you that that's not okay.
I sent Dedeker a GIF yesterday when we were talking about some other things that said, a date is an experience you have with another person that makes you appreciate being alone.
Jeez.
From Larry David, I think.
Jeez. Oh, God.
But,
I mean, I have had many dates where I felt that way afterwards.
I will say.
But I think this is interesting, like we mentioned before, about studies about like single people being unhappy is studies of people who are not intentionally single, right? Who wish that they weren't.
Yeah.
And I would bet that even amongst those people, a lot of that probably comes from the social pressure to not be single.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Definitely. Like the old maid idea or like that you're going to die alone idea and like how frightening that is to some people.
And I think that like this, in talking about relationship anarchy, like Emily, you started kind of mentioning it before, that I think a lot of people can look at that and say, oh, it's for people who are afraid of commitment. And again, calling it afraid, right? Like the phobia.
It's just like you
have to be afraid of it or else you would want it.
Yeah.
Like there's not commitment neutrality. Basically, every episode is going to come down to neutrality.
Just be neutral. Or maybe it's freaking milquetoast about everything.
I mean, some people like literally just like don't want it. It's not that they're afraid of it. It's like, this is not what I want for my life.
Yeah.
And that's fine. That's okay too.
Another thing that came up in that in that article about myths about commitment phobes was this myth that commitment phobes won't ever make plans with you or that they won't stick to plans that they make.
Yeah.
And like a lot of the other articles we read did say essentially exactly that.
Yeah, they're like, that means they're a commitment phobe.
Right.
This is a sign.
Right. And I think that it's like we mentioned at the beginning, commitment means a lot of different things.
Yeah.
And committing to certain things has a lot of different meanings. Like, is commitment the making of the promises, or is commitment the keeping the promises, or is commitment more of a dedication to something rather than the, you know, and it's obviously all of these things. But when we just talk about commitment as in like, oh, this person wants commitment or doesn't, we're really selling ourselves short from the fact that this is there's a lot more to it than that.
Yeah.
Right. This idea that maybe this person just doesn't want the same type of commitment that you do or that someone else does, or that we think is normal commitment to want. Or they may really want commitment. It's just not with you. And maybe they're just not that into you.
Well, if you want to hear something interesting.
I do.
Yes.
I always want to hear interesting things.
Oh, great. The term commitment phobia has actually been in a decline in usage, according to Google Trends.
Well, that's good.
However,
what do we got?
The term commitment issues has been in an increase in usage since 2004.
Okay.
I would bet that just issues in general, in that usage
this
of it.
This person's got issues.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have relationship issues. We have commitment issues.
Yes.
I bet that usage is probably...
They have a commitment issue. Yeah.
Right. Got to have the hand gesture.
Yeah, definitely.
There.
But it does make me want to, like, it does make me curious to know, like, okay, was it something in the 80s, 90s, early 2000s? What was, like, the pop psychology influencer?
That got issues to be a thing.
Got commitment phobia.
I see.
Phobia. Yeah. And then what was the thing that got issues to be a thing? Like, those are the things that I'm curious about.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But,
well, that'll be for
zeitgeist.
Our multi-etymology.
Oh, yeah.
Also.
Yeah. I would be into that show.
Yeah.
Actually, that'd be a super cool show.
All right, gang. What are our takeaways? Is there anything, any kind of practical knowledge we've gleaned from thinking about and talking about commitment today? That's ironic because you sound very non-committal in that response.
Yeah, maybe. Sure. Yeah. Probably one or two. Right. Possibly.
What do we got?
So I guess I'll pose the question first that we can talk about some actual like takeaways and things you can do about this. So the question here is basically in a lot of these studies, this being willing to sacrifice for the sake of a relationship and to compromise has been shown to be effective for relationships lasting longer and supposedly being happier. But as we pointed out before, where do you draw the line on what's too much sacrifice? Right? Like, when am I crossing the line into actually I'm just staying in a situation that makes me unhappy or I'm with someone I'm not compatible with?
Right. So it seems like asking yourself those kind of tough questions of how much sacrifice is too much sacrifice.
Yeah.
You know, how much sacrifice is starting to deplete me and what I need versus getting, you know, positive gains for the relationship.
Yeah. And then also to kind of build on that, like check in about your own boundaries and really evaluate like what they are, why they are there. And it, for example, I mean, even like, do you think that infidelity, well, this is what the next one is too, but like, what is infidelity? What are your boundaries surrounding infidelity? Do you think that infidelity is like your partner watching porn? Do you think it's like, you know, casual flirtation with a coworker? Do you think that infidelity is, you know, a kiss on the mouth or just like a sexual act? Like, what do those things mean to you?
Or is sexual fidelity only if they lie to you about the fact that they did it with someone else, right? Like, there's a huge spectrum here.
Yeah.
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 And I think related to that, also discussing what commitment or breaches of commitment look like for you personally and for your relationship or your relationships. Jason and I just had a conversation about this based on kind of a Gottman exercise / experiment that we're doing that we can tell
we'll talk more about later. Yeah.
In a few weeks. But was like really examining like, how do I know that this person is committed to this relationship? Mm. Like, what are the markers of commitment? And counter to that, that kind of gives you some clues of like, well, what would be the markers of a lack of commitment? As an example for me, like I realized like, oh, well, in my relationship with Jason, also in my relationship with Alex, it's little things like we consistently do radars all the time, or we consistently talk about like our meta communication, or everyone's proactive about making sure that we're spending time together, you know, things like that. That those are kind of like the markers of commitment that I feel. And so by extension, like breaches of commitment would be like dropping the ball on those kind of things, or someone not following through with what they said that they would do, things like that. So have those conversations both with yourself and with your partners about what are, you know, what are the things that count as commitment to us versus what are not. And so again, from the Gottmans, who we talk about
ye
often
old
on
Gottmans.
The oldie Gottmans, they have this great quote in one of their newest books that says, true commitment means choosing each other over and over again, because ultimately what makes relationships work is the decision to make them work.
And I think the little parenthetical I would add at the end is, ultimately, what makes relationships work is the decision from both parties to make it work.
Yeah.
That isn't, I feel like
right. both are choosing
it's
to
not
be
a
with
unilateral
one
thing. Yeah. And it's not that, like, if you just choose to make it work hard enough, then it'll all come through.
Yeah.
Right. That I feel like, at least for me, like, in examining kind of my boundaries and my preferences for that question of like, where is my line on like how much is too much sacrificing for a relationship? I feel like it would come down to that, where if I felt like things were becoming one-sided, or if things, you know, were systemically one-sided, where like that other person wasn't putting the same amount of commitment into it, you know, whatever we decided that meant, or that same amount of like deciding to make this work rather than, you know, pulling away or focusing on the problems or whatever it
keeping
is.
Keeping score,
right?
Stuff like that.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So I guess our last takeaway here is that commitment can be an incredibly important part of building a solid relationship, but it's also not going to be this magic bullet that just makes your relationship solid.
Mm. Yeah. I think I see that with a lot of people where the relationship's on the rocks and kind of the last ditch thing they do is let's get married.
Right.
Let's
show how much
let's
commitment
have a baby.
We have.
Yes. Yeah. Like, let's just kind of try to re-up the commitment and maybe that's going to be the thing that carries us through.
Yeah.
I'm sure for some people out there, they have that story that was the thing that did help and that's great. However, anecdotally, I've seen that go horribly off the rails way more often than it has been, you know, the thing that actually saves a relationship. So again, commitment itself is this very important thing, but it's not going to be the only thing that's going to turn things.
Be all.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. Well, what a thrilling ride we just went on with McCarthyism kind of popped in there unexpectedly, and wow, learned so much today. So we would love to hear your thoughts about commitment. What counts as commitment to you? What counts as a breach of commitment to you? What counts as infidelity or not to you? What are the things that you look for in a relationship, or what kind of commitments do you tend to look for in your life, or do you not look for it at all? The best place to share your thoughts with other listeners is on this episode's discussion thread in our private Facebook group or Discord chat. You can get access to these groups and you can join our exclusive community by going to patreon.com/multiamory. In addition, you can share with us publicly on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. You can email us at info@multiamory.com. You can leave us a voicemail at 678-MULTI-05. Or you can leave us a voice message on Facebook. Multiamory is created and produced by Jace Lindgren, Emily Matlack, and me, Dedeker Winston. Our episodes are edited by Mauricio Balvanera. Our social media wizard is Will McMillan. Our production assistant and researcher for this episode is Nicole Samra. Our theme song is Forms I Know I Did by Josh and Anand from the Fractal Cave EP. Full transcript is available on this episode's page on multiamory.com.